This week, a federal appeals court overturned a lower court ruling and declared that a Minnesota program that detains some sex offenders after they've served their time is constitutional. Now, there are hundreds of sex offenders in Minnesota who are released by the Department of Corrections after their time served and then monitored. But the Minnesota Sex Offenders Program, run by the Department of Human Services, detains offenders, now more than 720 of them, even after their sentences are over and for an indefinite time. It's a move started years ago in many states because of the thinking that certain sex offenders can't be safely returned to the community. But civil rights activists say it's inhumane, and in June of 2015, a lower court agreed that it was unconstitutional and ordered Minnesota to reform it. Well, now, with the high court ruling this week, the worry is those reforms will slow down. It's a ruling reverberating beyond Minnesota. Emily Piper is commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services, which oversees the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. Emily, Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, let's tell people outside the state who may not have followed this. Both these court findings came after a 2011 class action lawsuit on the part of the detained offenders who claimed the detentions violated their due process rights. But I'm sure a lot of people are shocked to hear that hundreds of people in your state and many in 20 other states are held beyond their time served. So why was this program instituted? What was the reasoning behind it?
Well, this program was created in 1994 by then Governor of Minnesota Arne Carlson after our Minnesota Supreme Court reversed the civil commitment of two sex offenders under our former state psychopathic personality statutes. And the governor felt so strongly about public safety in those two sex offenders cases that he called a special session of the legislature, and the legislature then passed a new law permitting civil commitment of sexually dangerous persons who are found highly likely to reoffend.
Yeah, and so the thinking is that this is a civil commitment, a decision by a judge, that even though there was time served, people must go back to some sort of incarceration, not in a typical prison. But you have over 700 people now. Where do they go? How do you keep them?
We have two campuses of our sex offender program, one up in northern Minnesota in Moose Lake, Minnesota, and then a second program down in St. Peter, Minnesota. And our program has grown throughout the years, in large part because of a really heinous murder of a young woman in northern Minnesota in 2003 by a sex offender who was not civilly committed. Before that time, we only had less than 200 people normally in our program. And following that murder, our numbers grew and grew, and now we have 722 offenders in our program.
Well, what are you saying? Are you saying that this is maybe somewhat political, that people were reacting to the shock of the public and trying to demonstrate that the state is on top of this? Or why would it grow after that murder?
The murder of Drew Shadeen in 2003 was something that it was such a heinous crime in a small community of a beautiful young woman, and it scared people, and it provided an increased awareness of society of sex offenders and the availability of civil commitment, I think. And judges then used it more frequently to address people that were being released from prison that had these really horrible crimes in their past.
Look, we have reported on the many surges in conversations about this topic. It seems that it's been ongoing for decades. What do you do with repeat offender sex offenders? Can they even be rehabilitated? I remember when the author Andrew Voss suggested, and there was a lot of outrage, that they be sent to their own island, that they could not be brought back into society. Your program has only released, I think, a handful of people to nursing homes and halfway houses in 20 years, and maybe one or two have been completely released. Is your thinking in your state that maybe sex offenders cannot be rehabilitated?
So in Minnesota, we have provisionally discharged 8 clients. So they have entered into the community under supervision by our program. The courts have discharged fully one person who is a juvenile-only offender from our program. I think our statute and our framework is based on an understanding of the clinical research, which says that there are instances where sex offenders can effectively proceed through a treatment plan and successfully be reintegrated in certain circumstances back into the community with a lower likelihood of reoffense. We know that from the research that incarceration doesn't deter sex offenders. It only suppresses the deviant behaviors that sex offenders exhibit. Research in this field shows that sex offender treatment and supervision together are what enhances public safety. Which is what is most important to the people of Minnesota and how we operate this program.
And I guess that leads to the question, what do you do? If you've got this program going on for 20 years now and you have over 700 people, exponentially, it sounds, you know, you're going to have, you know, 1,500 and then 2,000. And what do you do?
Well, I don't think the program is a static program. Our treatment program has three phases, and we have seen over the last several years more and more offenders progressing through those treatment phases. So although they might not be in the community yet, they are moving through our treatment program with, I think, the hope that they will at some time meet the statutory criteria for provisional discharge. Mm-hmm. We also, in the mid-1990s, struggled with clinical leadership. And so developing and implementing an effective treatment program hasn't always existed in our sex offender program. And we believe it does now. And we're seeing people move through the treatment program.
Well, so you're saying that you're going to maybe see, like, as something moves through the body of a snake, you're going to see this bulge move out into the public as treatment works, I think you're saying. But what about the claim of the people in the lawsuit filed with your department, the Department of Human Services, about being detained after their time served? Is that they don't have due process. They don't have the regular court appeals. They don't have the regular process of appealing their detention. I mean, do you ever lie awake at night and think that there are people in that community of 720 that don't belong there?
I think one of the challenges that we have had historically with sex offenders in our program is not that there isn't their right to petition. Under our law, they can petition every 6 months for a review of their commitment. The offenders that I think most about in this framework are those that don't petition and why they don't petition. And I can't answer for any particular offender why they would not follow their rights and ask for their custody reduced. But those are the offenders that I think most about, where we don't do these forensic assessments without a petition normally, and whether or not there are people whose forensic assessment would say they are ready to be transferred to a less restrictive setting, but they just haven't petitioned to ask for it.
Maybe they're afraid. I mean, do you worry about that they're afraid that they don't know what they would do?
I mean, that could be part of it. I think that one of the challenges we have and why we try through our treatment program and our positions on provisional discharge and transfer is we want to be thoughtful about the institutionalization of these individuals, because many of them have been institutionalized sometimes their whole adult life or a large part of their whole adult life. And so we want to make sure that a successful integration happens if they're eventually reintegrated to the community, and that's going to require a whole host of life and coping skills that person will need to develop that they've never had to before in their life.
Emily Piper, again, commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. A lot of criticism and a lot of shock that over 700 people are detained after their time served in your state. Do you think people really are aware enough of this problem, of, you know, how many people your department has to worry about?
I think people in Minnesota, this case has raised awareness for the people of Minnesota about the importance of this program and how different states have handled the issue of these sex offenders who are oftentimes very challenging and have horrible histories. I think our neighbor Wisconsin is a really good comparison, where they incarcerate three times as many sex offenders as the state of Minnesota does, but their civil commitment program is half our size. And so each state is trying to manage this a different way, but the sex offenders in every state are being managed in some capacity, I think.
Emily Piper, again, commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Emily, thank you.
Thank you.